And with that, let's get into today's interview. Again, we have Steve Johnson with us. He's the independent candidate for State Senate in District 1. And he is a write-in. Important part of your candidacy here, Steve, is that people are going to have to write you in. I'm going to have to fill in the little box beside
your
name.
It's a multi-step process.
two things if they wanted to vote for you. And your opponent, again, is Scott Herndon, who is the Republican nominee for this race. And Scott turned us down to appear with us today. With that, let's dig in on you, Steve. Give us more information about your background and what you think qualifies you for this state Senate position.
Well, we moved when I was 8 years old to the farm on Beers Humbert Road in Sagal. And mom and dad had been looking for a farm for quite a while. They found the 80-acre farm in 1957. I was 8 years old. And so I had a wonderful childhood on the farm. I have three brothers. We had four Guernsey cows. Each of us had a cow to hand milk. Grew up, went to Southside Elementary. In those days, Southside, in fact, all the country schools went through eighth grade. Met and fell in love with my wife, Marguerite, in the eighth grade at 14. And we went on to high school, graduated from Sandpoint High in 68, and then went on down to Moscow together, to the U of I. When I was at Southside Elementary, had an inspirational teacher and principal. His name was Jim Stoichev, and he inspired me as well as my parents to do meaningful work. And so right then and there, I decided I wanted to be a teacher and an educator and do some what I felt were meaningful, productive things for our community. And my dad was not able to finish high school. He was young and strong and healthy and worked in the woods and worked in sawmills. And but then in World War II, he was in the Army Air Force. He had some back issues after and a disability. So he was not able to continue that physical labor. And he and my mom both encouraged my three brothers and I get some training, get some education, either technical, vocational, academic, so that if something happens in your life and you need to look at some different careers or opportunities, then you could take advantage of that. Unfortunately, he did not have a very good backup plan. But my three brothers and I were able to go on and go to school, and all four of us have been really blessed with meaningful work that also made for a living wage, and all four of us are reasonably comfortable. So public education. Well, let's see work experience. So in high school, I worked as a ranch hand for a fellow out in Clagstone, out in the Hoodoo Valley, changing irrigation pipe, putting up hay, fixing fence, that kind of thing. After high school, after graduating from Sandpoint High in 68, then I worked as a railroad laborer for what was called at that time a section gang, and we actually put the new ribbon rail on the long bridge that goes across Ponderay here. So two summers of doing that and going to college then during the school year. Later on, while I was down at Moscow, I worked part-time as a installer for Lennox furnaces. And so we installed ductwork and got to crawl around on our stomachs in the crawl space with spiders in your face. And so I had a variety of physical laboring jobs. And in the meantime, also did some selective logging on our farm. Quite a bit of it is treed. And so at that time, it was, there was a little mill at Kokalala, and it was a stud mill. And so we had just 8-foot logs that we took in. It was a whole different operation than what logging is really now. Let's see. And then came back home. Marguerite and I got married. And came back home, built a little log honeymoon cabin on the farm, and started teaching, and taught at Sagal and Southside and Northside and Farman, and for 20 years, 10 of those as an elementary principal. And then during that 10-year of elementary principalship, I served on the Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce as the education chair, served on the library board for Sandpoint, right as we were building the brand new library in Sandpoint, brand new library in Clark Fork, and the bookmobile for the more rural areas. So really proud of some of the things we were able to accomplish there. And let's see, then, oh, where are we at now?
20 years in education.
Okay, there. So yeah. Then after the first 20 years at the elementary level, which we were very rewarding again and meaningful. In fact, it fulfilled a dream, because when I was at Southside as a student, I wanted to come back to Southside and said, I want to do something like Mr. Stoichev had done. I wanted to teach and ideally even be a principal there at Southside, and that dream actually came through true. And then the next 20 years, I was at what's called the LPO, the Lake Pend'Oreille Alternative High School. Was there for 20 years. When I was there, we had a daycare, so we had a number of 15, 16, 17-year-old young women who had children or were pregnant, and they were allowed to take the class on parenting and how to raise raise our next generation. And a wonderful program, a really good intervention in my opinion. And at the alternative high school, we graduated normally between 15 and 20 students, many of which probably would not have finished high school. They're considered at-risk students. So with all of that, huge supporter of public education, and feel like it's one of the main institutions in our country, in our community, and one of the main ways that we can prepare the next generation, the people that are going to take over our country and keep it the great country that it is.
I'm going to throw out here, you mentioned Jim Stoichev as a mentor. Well, he was also in the legislature. He was representing in the House. He was representing District 1, and I don't know how many years he did that.
Quite a few years. Yeah. Quite a few years. Sure, at his funeral, at his funeral at the Methodist Church, all four Idaho governors were there, including the most popular governor Idaho ever had, named Cecil Andrus, and I got to interact with them at that funeral. Yeah. So that was, in those days, the parties really respected each other. There was a common decency and civility, and we disagreed, obviously. Anybody that seems to be in government has some strong feelings and some but it was always a respectful, civil, decent kind of exchange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who have been around here for a while. I remember Jim, he was a maverick in the legislature, but he had good relations with across the political spectrum there. And we'll actually come back to that question, because it's the polarization is a question that everybody that's running for office should really try to deal with. But let's get into a couple other questions first. So, given your great background, thank you. I learned a lot there that actually I didn't know. Why are you running?
So this is home. I just love this place. And like I say, my whole life since 1957 has been here. And it just has become part of my identity. And so I'm running because I feel it's under threat. It's almost like it's under attack, this idea that that people can move in and then kind of straighten out the hicks, those of us who have been here forever, kind of straighten us out and tell us what we need to be doing and how we need to run our state. And I just really don't like it. And I think it's dangerous. And it all has to do with attitude. We have neighbors moving in on our road, which is called Beers Humbird Road. And so far, we've been really lucky that I know California gets a bad rep sometimes, but a lot of it has to do with attitude. And the couple, the most recent couple that has come from Northern California, they're just really nice people, just looking for a safe, stable, sane, decent place to semi-retire. And this is it. So I'm just really concerned that if people come in with attitudes like, we know what's best for you, you locals are kind of either uneducated or confused about what's important and we're going to tell you, I just don't like that approach at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, with that, let's get into the issues. So what do you consider to be the biggest issues in this race?
So number one for me is property taxes. I realize there need to be property taxes to support things that I feel important, police and fire and infrastructure and the schools and so on. But I'm also very concerned about this idea that potentially we could be taxed out of our homes. So my first bill or co-sponsor or sign-on that I would want to advocate for would be what's called the homeowner's exemption, which if that's your primary residence, then you're allowed to exempt, at this point, $125,000. And I feel like that should be doubled to $250,000, and that there should be some kind of a correlation between rising property values and the rising homeowner's exemption. And then secondly, along that same line, even the rents have become pretty outlandish for people that are still making $15, $17, even $20 an hour. We have oftentimes $2,000 a month rents for a one- or two-bedroom apartment, and it just doesn't pencil out. And if we're going to keep our young people and if we're going to keep workers here, I mean, how that affects the economy dramatically. If good companies, if the Lighthouse and the airplane company and all these local places can't have their workers, Schweitzer, if they can't have workers here that are stable and have housing, then we might lose them. I mean, it's just really important. So property taxes is number one. Number two is education. I feel like we can provide equal opportunity for lots of students. I was at a gathering at Idaho Poor Authority last night, and some folks there from that were representing some of the disabled population called PISNE, Panhandle Special Needs, asked specifically about what are some plans to make sure that we have accommodations for disabled students. One of my own children went through a special education, and it's just a requirement, I think, for a civil society to provide opportunity, to provide educational opportunities, and not all necessarily academic. In fact, I have a lifelong friend that I went to Southside Elementary with who some years ago was bucking grain sacks at, the co-op used to be downtown at that what's called the Granary District now. And so I remember going in there and there was grain dust everywhere. And Ken said, I think I'm going to do something different. He was all plugged up with all that grain dust, and he had been in the CBs and learned electrical. And he said, I think I'm going to go become an electrician. And by golly, a few years later, that's what he did. So there's places and needs for vocational, technical, academic, all different kinds of opportunities. But to me, education of all kinds is an investment in the future, and that's one of my biggest priorities. Third one for me is public lands. I grew up camping and hunting and fishing and hiking and just loving the environment that we're in. And so that's, I want to make sure public lands stay public, stay accessible to the public, and that they keep this wonderful place, that they keep it just as pristine and beautiful. One year I taught up at Priest Lake Elementary. I mean, but the whole area is just home, and it's just a incredibly beautiful and wonderful place to live.
Okay, well, you wiped out a few of the issues I was going to ask you about. But let's circle back on the taxes. So you're in favor of increasing the homeowner's exemption, basically
yes.
doubling it,
yes.
which would give a lot of folks that own homes that have risen in value
right.
More of a tax break. So that would affect the property tax. But there has been a proposal to initiate a flat tax as an income tax. Idaho has both a income tax and property taxes, as well as a sales tax. And the idea is to institute a flat tax. That proposal has been up in the legislature, I believe, last year. It might come alive again this year. What would you think about a flat tax?
Well, I'm pretty comfortable, actually, with what's going on with our... Basically, we have that three-legged tax schedule, property tax, sales tax, and income tax. And we can hopefully keep a balanced approach, and that provides a stable income. And in our case, we have that sizable surplus. Unfortunately, in my opinion, that surplus is so big because we're near the bottom, about 50th, I believe, in funding for public education. So what I would like to see is that some of that surplus, maybe a good portion of that surplus, be dedicated to get us out of the bottom tier of supporting public education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that budget surplus, I think it was over $1 billion.
$1 billion plus.
Last year. The year before that, it was close to $1 billion, a large number for a state that's relatively small population.
Absolutely.
And I, where that money came from, part of it was because of COVID, but also our sales tax picked up dramatically. And part of that was because I think we started taxing some internet sales that hadn't been previously taxed.
Right.
So mm-hmm. we see a new revenue stream there. Well, you do mention that education funding is, we are very last in per capita
student I think very last.
From, by the state. But just this summer, I think it was, they called a special session, and the governor promoted, and it was approved, a $410 million increase in the state education budget. Do you think that is, well, and to lay a little more groundwork here, that came after the Reclaim Idaho was promoting a ballot initiative to increase the state funding by $300 million. So actually, the legislature got back into session, and, you know, you could speculate, was this to head off the ballot initiative or not? And of course, Reclaim Idaho believes their pressure that they exerted through that did, in fact, result in the higher funding for education. But do you think that is going to make our education funding more adequate now?
Well, there's huge potential there. The concern is there's a sizable group, and my opponent is on that in that arena, that part of it. There's a sizable group that can do whatever they decide to do with that $410 million. They can spend it, as, in my opinion, as the current legislature intended. And by the way, my predecessor, Senator Jim Woodward, voted for it, in much to his credit. And so hats off to the legislature for passing that. Big concern, though, is the legislature has a lot of leeway this next legislature convening in January, a lot of leeway about what they can do with that. They can make some significant changes. They can put it, in my opinion, places that I don't believe it were intended to be put.
Okay. Well, let's turn to another issue, and that would be transportation and infrastructure in our state. Of course, one of the big functions of our state government is to provide good roads, as well as bridges, and that physical infrastructure our citizens need. How do you think the state is doing there? Would you look for making any changes or advocating for any changes if you were in the legislature as a senator?
So I've been replacing that if I'm when there is when I'm there. So, but actually, I think there are some improvements being made. I live south. I live in southern Bonner County towards the Granite Hill, where they're bringing up that four lane, and a lot of federal dollars there. A lot of vision on how we can improve our infrastructure. One of the big things is the federal government's contribution, and our federal legislators went and voted for that, the infrastructure bill, and that money is going to be spent in Idaho if we accept it. And there's another interesting contrast. I guess we're not into the compare and contrast between myself and my opponent, but maybe I'll jump into that anyway. He's of the opinion on his social media and his YouTube and so on, not to accept any federal funds at all. And here is all this federal money that Idaho citizens, all of us, have contributed, and time for it to come back and help us with roads and bridges and internet and water systems and all the things that we need to have, safe and good lives. And my opponent says deny all federal money, even though that's money that we've already sent to the government. I guess that's
okay.
I don't want to go on and on, but
okay, yep.
But I think there's a real need for infrastructure, and I can't believe anyone would be against accepting money to help us with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one hot button issue right now is abortion, and of course the U.S. Supreme Court just reversed Roe v. Wade, and which was the constitutional right for women to get abortions. And Idaho has kicked in with one of the most restrictive, maybe the most restrictive abortion law in the country. Where do you stand on abortion, which is now effectively a state issue after the Supreme Court ruling?
I really believe that a woman's health, and especially her life, but her health and her life should not depend on a complicated pregnancy. This morning, I had breakfast at the Hoot Owl, and across from me is a former student from the LPO, from the Alternative High School, and she's there with her parents and with her husband, and they are expecting their first baby, and she told me that today is delivery day. And so it just is, it's just so important that that young, soon-to-be mother has the full support of our community and the medical people, that she can have a safe delivery. And if it's not a safe delivery, if there's complications, that the other options are available to her. And that is no place, in my opinion, for politicians to be intervening. It just is not a, it's just not an appropriate place for politics.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to see, any kind of limit set on abortion?
Well, I my oldest three children are adopted. We adopted them all at one time. They were 1, 2, and 3 at the time, and so I really want to be a supportive person for adoption services, and I really want to respect the medical people. And if the medical people, knowledgeable people who have trained their, in fact, at this meeting last night, I got to talk to one of our local doctors and got to have some good discussion on just how difficult some of these decisions are. Healthcare for pregnancy is a risky situation. I mean, fortunately, most of them turn out fine. But when there's a complication, to have anybody besides an expert medical person involved, no matter what stage of the pregnancy, in my opinion, we need experts, we need medical people to say this is what is the best for the mother and for the hopefully the healthy baby.
Mm-hmm. Okay. another issue here. Voters are going to see on the ballot a proposed constitutional amendment that would allow the legislature to call itself into session. Currently, the legislature can be called into session by the governor for a special session, but only by the governor. This would allow the legislature to call itself into session. It's got some pros and cons, of course, but where do you stand on that?
I'm basically a con. I feel like our Constitution was written with some real good balance checks and balances, and I'm real reluctant to have amendments to the Constitution. And I'm actually a little leery of this one with a legislature that seems like it's oftentimes wanting to be in contention with the governor. I think they need to work together, and we need to all work together. And so I will not be voting for the constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's an issue for every voter to to wrestle with. It's not just a legislative question at this time, because it is going to be on the ballot on November 8th. Let's circle back on public lands. You said that you're strongly in favor of maintaining our public lands. How do you feel about public land management by the state and the federal agencies that are in charge of our public lands? Do you think they're doing a good job, or are there changes that you would like to see the state exert itself for?
Well, I'm pretty conservative in regards to that, because I hate to see the forest fires. There's all that timber that can be used to build affordable housing, and there's all those areas to recreate in and to hunt and fish and so on. And so I would like to see more management of our public lands. And at the same time, I realize there's a certain attraction to what might be pristine public lands, and don't want to be in there too much. But a fire, even though it's a natural thing, it just seems like a waste, and it's something that can really get out of hand and limit our resources. So I would be an advocate for increased management of public lands.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I will mention, if folks have just tuned in, that you're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. I'm the host, Chris Bessler, and I'm speaking today with Steve Johnson. He is the independent write-in candidate for State Senate in District 1. Steve, I have probably just a few more questions at this point. And I guess one would be, why are you running as an independent and as a write-in? You were originally going to be on the ballot in the House race for C-Day, I think it
mm-hmm.
was.
Yeah. Yes.
But after the primary, you switched.
Yes. So a couple things came into play. One is, I think we were all stunned, or I shouldn't say all, but many of us were stunned by the outcome of the Republican primary. A very effective and dignified and honest Senator Jim Woodward. Many of us just assumed he would stay in that. He was the incumbent and had been doing just a wonderful job. And we just assumed he would stay there. Unfortunately, this opponent that I'm running against, Scott Herndon, was able to get over $100,000 of outside District 1 money. Much of it out of state even. And then he hired a lobby firm out of Nevada to create this, in my opinion, the most dishonest, distorted, untruthful campaign I've ever seen in my 60 plus years of living here. Just made up, in many cases, it seemed like just lies about Jim Woodward. And evidently, some of the people who didn't know Senator Woodward fell for it. And these postcards, 18 of them, that were just crap, they believed it. And so Herndon won by a little over 1,000 votes. So that stunned myself and quite a few other people. And so I called the Secretary of State's office in Boise and asked And there was nobody going to be running against Herndon because the Republican primary was over. Well, all the primaries were over.
And there was no Democratic
candidate. And there was no Democratic candidate.
Or any other candidate.
Or any other candidate. So I called him, Secretary of State, and the people there told me that, yes, I could run against, but the only way I could run against Herndon would be as a write-in independent candidate. And at the same point, I had become increasingly convinced that actually independent category would maybe hopefully cross the bridge and lessen the polarization between the two major parties. And so I sincerely feel like I can represent everyone, not being a kind of a bad term, but a party hack. I think if we avoid aligning completely with one party or the other, then we can reach some common ground and achieve things that are good for our neighbors and our entire community. So so the circumstances led me to the independent role, and actually my philosophy has become increasingly independent, and I think it's a good beginning to reduce this polarization that all of us seem to be so concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I mentioned previously, your opponent, Scott Herndon, who is the Republican nominee, and he declined our request to be here today. We're hoping to have a robust discussion between the two of you guys so you could test one another's sure. Thoughts and philosophies. I will say that Scott did participate during the primary season, and he did come in for an interview for that. But had he been here, is there a particular point that you would have made with him if he'd participated?
Well, yes. I would want to know, why was he so convinced on the necessity of to badmouth a really good man? I taught with Senator Woodward's wife at Brenda at the alternative high school. They're Mr. and Mrs. Bonner's Ferry, just solid, thoughtful, moderate, civil and decent people. And why Mr. Herndon chose to go the route that he did, I'm afraid it was just to get the votes. I think there must be some appeal to this extremist, negative, made up stuff that he did. And it seems to me like we've got somebody that's coming in from San Francisco, California, and wants to change for the bad the home that I've my home for the last, like I say, 60 plus years. And it's just like an affront. It's like, why are you here? Why can't you just come in and be part of us and we can talk about reasonable things without all these personal insults? It's just real concerning to me. And I think it's dangerous. It's the first time anything like this has happened that I know of in Bonner County. And we certainly don't want it to become a precedent. And so that's one of the main reasons I'm in this contest.
Excuse me. Okay, well, you actually crossed over into my last question here, but let's touch on it anyway. So political offices, from the local ones to the national, become really polarized. We live in a very polarized time politically, to the point where some people are concerned that our democracy itself isn't going to hold together. Do you see ways to find common ground among the folks that would be your constituents, and how would you go about representing those who may have different ideas and viewpoints than you?
Well, I've got a little story that happened just last week. There's quite a spectrum of philosophies, but as a good friend has said, the extremists are way out there. And so most of us are fairly reasonable, in my opinion, people, and we just want to do the right thing and do what's good for our neighbors and good for our community. Well, I had a there was a road construction crew next to my little shop out in Ponderay, and my little business, and they were all hard hats and with the lime green bright reflective vests, and so I went out there because there was quite a bunch of dust being created, and I asked, I assume it was the foreman, what was going on, and he said, well, they were, you know, they were going to finish up just in a day, and they weren't, they, you know, they were not wanting to make any more dust than necessary. And I had my button on, my Steve Johnson campaign button, and I said, have you heard anything about the campaign? And he says, oh, yes. and then he paused a bit, and then he said, you know, he says, I'm really right-wing, but he says, I'm not crazy. And and so that was, and then he asked for one of my cards, and I gave him one of my cards. So that to me is a little bit of a movement towards the middle, and the idea that as an independent, we can provide good government and good services for all of us, and the hard hats with the right wing and the other whatever the other part of that is on the kind of on the other side, we're all in this together. We're all just wanting a safe and secure and free life, and we've got much more in common than we. We've got way. We just have a whole lot in common.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I hold that belief myself. We have more in common than we have that separates us.
Okay, and, that's a better way to say it.
if we could all just agree that we can disagree on some things.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, compromise, for some folks, compromise is like a dirty word. Mm-hmm. In my understanding, after 40 years of teaching history and government and English and all that, is compromise is what our government is all about. I mean, we try to arrive at a place that we do the most good for the most people, and that's pretty much what we all want to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve Johnson, independent writing candidate for state senate in District 1, any closing statement you'd like to put out there?
Yes, I saw the headline on the paper today, and I want to say that vandalism in any shape or form or any kind of vandalism is completely inappropriate, and so I feel bad that these people evidently vandalized his signs.
There's stories about vandalism occurring to some Scott Herndon campaign signs.
So that is just completely reprehensible and not at all what I believe in, and I hope it never happens again.
Okay. Well, the election is November 8th. You are a write-in. People have to write in your name and color the square. And they'll see a blank spot on the ballot next to Scott Herndon's name if they did want to vote for you. Of course, they could also choose to vote for your opponent. And I believe that early voting is underway. Do you know the date on that?
I don't think early voting is underway yet.
Oh, that's right. It comes up, I think, next week.
I believe it's next week. Absentee ballots, you can still pick up an absentee ballot and get it turned in before October 28th. Absentee, as you well know, I imagine, is you don't have to stand in line. Actually, many of us love to stand in line. It's kind of, oh, by the way, my granddaughter turned, this will be her first time to vote. So we're really beating the drum for young people. It takes all of us to make a wonderful community like we have. And hopefully all of us will be engaged. Thank you.
Steve Johnson, again, independent writing candidate for state senate. Thanks for coming in and talking with us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we're going to take a musical break, then I'll be back with a few program notes and a couple of things going on around town. And this is a song I like to ask our guests if they have a song they like. And you gave me a couple. We'll actually play both of them. But first, we're going to hear John Denver, Take Me Home, Country Roads. It's about 3 minutes. And then I will be back for a few more words before we sign off for the day.
Almost heaven, West Virginia.